and listen to. To remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everybody. Shinchu and I have been talking about the precepts, and so I'm going to continue with that today. We're going to talk about the fourth bodhisattva precept. Basically, don't lie. That's the bottom line. Don't lie. Do not speak dishonestly. Speak truthfully. So this is fundamental. Yamada Roshi said, Zazen, honesty is the most important thing in the practice of Zazen. Honesty is the most important thing in the practice of Zazen. I really love this quote. The next part of the quote is a little more challenging. You must suffer absolutely. I think what that means is you need to be absolutely honest about your suffering. And you need to understand the truth of suffering in your life. You need to understand the First Noble Truth. You need to really face the difficulties in your life and be honest with yourself. I forgot my reading glasses, so I'll be kind of going back and forth here. Dogen Zenji says, the whole universe in the 10 directions is a practitioner's everyday speech. The whole universe in the 10 directions is a practitioner's everyday speech. I mean, we could spend hours just talking about that one quote. The whole universe is contained in just this moment of expression. Just this moment of speech. Speech is not just our words. It's how we look. It's how we stand. It's how we relate. I mean, as you know, you can say something, you can say the exact same words in many different ways. You know, if you're glaring at someone and you say, can I help you? Right? That's expressing something. If you have kind face and welcoming posture and you say, can I help you? You know, this is our everyday speech. This is the entire universe is contained within those words. Dogen also says, being pure in our speech is a gate to what the Dharma illumines. For it eradicates the four evil attitudes associated with beings in the hells. Hurtful speech, which is asuras, the warring deities. Hatred, angry speech. Greedy, jealous speech, hungry ghosts. And beasts or unawakening beings, ignorant speech. So being pure in speech is a gate to what the Dharma illumines. It means that when we take care with our speech and our expression, the Dharma is a lumen for us. A gate opens for us. A way of being opens for us. So this expression, taking care with our expression, in particular being honest with our expression, is a way that we find our way in the world. So we ask ourselves, what do we want to express in this world? What do we want to contribute to this world? What world do we want to live in? Our expression, our speech, both internal and external, reflects the current state of our mind and our heart, our lived experience, how we see things, right? And it reflects what we think the truth is. So to speak truthfully is to dig really deeply into what is this world for you? What is the truth? You know, we can say something. I'll talk about qualities of speech in a minute, but we can say something quite harshly, and we say, "Well, it's the truth." Right? It's the truth. Or we might say, this is true. This is what really happened. Well, yes, but what is the deepest truth? According to Zen teachings, the deepest truth is the truth of interdependence. That we are all interrelated. The interconnectedness, that dependent co-arising, that this vibrant empty in the sense of empty of isolation, empty of separateness, this is the truth. This is the most fundamental truth, is this interrelatedness. And realizing this truth, moment by moment, is awakening. And it manifests in the compassionate heart and mind, a kind of vigorous, rigorous compassion. So truthful speech, in the deepest sense, is speech that expresses this deepest truth. Right? The mind of the bodhisattva is grounded in this truth. When we sit zazen, we sit ourselves down in all of our complexity and nakedness and whatever. We sit ourselves down on the ground of this truth of interdependence. So the mind of the bodhisattva is grounded in this vision of oneself and others, other people, other beings, other things, completely attuned with, a part of. And therefore, the mind of the bodhisattva expresses this truth in all their actions. This is what we aim for in our lives. This is what guides our expressions and what we do, right? It goes in both directions. When we sit zazen and we settle ourselves into the mind of the bodhisattva, into the mind of awakening, into the mind that's dedicated to awakening, we taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. We taste the truth of interdependence. We taste that. We know that, even for a moment. Or at least we hover in the vicinity of it. And when we taste that truth, we naturally express it with others. So our first step in cultivating honest speech is to stop and reflect on ourselves. Our first step is to sit zazen and simply be. And then, this is not in zazen, but then we reflect on ourselves. We are honest with ourselves. And then we listen to the situation honestly. We listen to others. We listen to what the world is telling us. And with that mind, we see more clearly. So to return to truthful speech is to return to the mind and the heart of the bodhisattva. to seek what is most true, even when it's difficult. And it's often difficult to see clearly. So it's like the mind of the Bodhisattva expresses itself directly, and as we cultivate the mind of the Bodhisattva, we become closer to the ability, we are more likely to express right speech, honest speech, truly honest speech. And if we examine the factors that lead us to right speech, it's like breadcrumbs leading us back to the mind of the Bodhisattva, right? So it goes both ways. We sit zazen, we cultivate the mind of the Bodhisattva directly, and we look at our speech, we look at our actions, we look at the way we are in the world, we examine that, and by clarifying how we are, how we speak, reflecting on, taking it up, then as we hone our ability in that, that then leads us back to the mind of the Bodhisattva. So if we follow these breadcrumbs of honest, right speech, we find awakening in that. So think about an example when someone is challenging you, when there's a challenge to something you want, the truth hurts, or what you really want to do is lie. Now, you look at that and you say, well, what is true right speech here? That one of the things that's nice about this way of looking at it is it's quite flexible. It's not rigid. Like, oh, this is the truth and this is lying. And we have to be, what? Inflexible. Rigid. About what we think truth is. No, the truth of the situation is the interdependence of the situation. So you look and you say, how do I express that? I've used this example before of someone coming to the door when someone who has been is a victim of domestic violence is hiding in your house. You are not going to tell the person that hurt them that they're there. That's a lie. Right? One way of looking at it is it's a lie. No. Haven't seen her or him. Gosh, you know, yeah, I was wondering. I haven't seen him in several weeks. Good luck. Right? One way of looking at it is a lie. Another way of looking at it, the way I'm talking about it, is an expression of the truth, the deepest truth, the compassionate truth. So we need to, when we think about honest speech, we need to go deeply into this. And it's very helpful to have guidelines for thinking about how we do this. The other thing I want to say about this, and I'll go into some of what the Buddha said, is dishonesty breeds dishonesty. We may forget what honest speech even feels like. I'm not going to go into politics right now, but I think our world, this whole idea of false and real and what's false and who says what and how do you know, it's just all over the place right now, isn't it? So it's even more imperative that we really cultivate this attitude of right speech. The Buddha said, for the person who transgresses in one thing, I tell you, there is no evil deed that is not to be done. Which one thing? In other words, what's the heart of the matter? Telling a deliberate lie. So there is dishonest speech that reflects the fact that we are deluded human beings, that we can't see clearly. We do our best, but we can't see clearly. But what What the Buddha is talking about here is a deliberate lie.
Could you read that again?
For the person who transgresses in one thing, I tell you, there is no evil deed that is not to be done. Which one thing? In other words, what's central? This. Telling a deliberate lie. So this is the distinction between the fact that, you know, I don't know whether any of you recall this, but Shinshu has said a number of times that when she was a little girl, she thought men's hair didn't grow more than that long. Because she never saw men with hair longer than that. So she just figured, well, boys' hair is different than girls' hair, and it just doesn't grow any longer, right? So if you said to her, well, how long do boys' hair grow? She would say, well, that long. Well, that wouldn't be true, would it? But it would be the truth that she knew, because that's what she saw. This is what we do. We gather information that from the environment about what we think the world is like. Then we create a world based on that information that we've gathered. And it's usually fairly out of whack for one reason or another. This is the truth of sexism, racism. This is the truth of all of the assumptions that we make about people in our world, right? So there's always some measure for most of us of delusion in the way we see things. But we do our best, and we're humble. We do our best to come back to the truth, to clarity. So there's that level of what's kind of dishonest, we might say. But this is different. He's saying telling a deliberate lie. In telling a deliberate lie, you do violence to yourself and you do violence to others. And another part of the early Buddhist teaching, the Buddha says, speak only the speech that neither torments self nor harms others. That speech is truly well spoken. Speak only endearing speech, speech that is welcomed. Speech, when it brings no evil to others, is pleasant. He's not telling us here that we have to be nicey-nice all the time. He's telling us, in fact, there's other guidance for what you say. How if you're going to admonish someone else, what do you have to do first? And I'll tell you that in a minute. But the point is, speak only speech that is neither torments the self. False speech, aggressive speech, harsh speech, all of that does violence to ourselves as well as other. Lying disturbs the mind. We can't settle. We can't be honest. If we're not kind, we can't be honest. And if we're dishonest, we can't be kind. So speak only endearing speech, speech that is welcome. He tells us to reflect on our speech before, during, and after speaking. Now, this might be a little difficult to reflect on your speech while you're speaking, but anyway, he's speaking to his son. Whenever you want to perform a verbal act, you should reflect on it. This verbal act I want to perform, would it lead to self-affliction, to afflictions of others, or both? Is it an unskillful verbal act with painful consequences, painful results? If on reflection you know that it would lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both, it would be an unskillful verbal act with painful consequences, painful results, then any verbal act of that sort is absolutely unfit for you to do. So then he says, reflect on this before you speak, reflect on this while you're speaking, and reflect on it after you're speaking. So if we think about the fundamental truth being the truth of interdependence and how the truth of that opens compassion and awareness in our own hearts and minds, then taking up a practice like this Not only is it nicer for everybody that's around you and keep your own mind calm, it also pulls you into awakening. Kind of like, these are things that we can do, actively do. We can say, well, I want to wake up. Okay, well, what does that look like when it's at home? You know, I want to be enlightened. I want to wake up. I want to be freed from suffering. These are things that we can actually do that when we do them, pull us into that. Pull us into the mind of the Bodhisattva. So he's telling us what to do and how to do it. So if we want to admonish people, including ourselves, this is what we should do. O bhikkhus. A bhikkhu who desires to admonish another should do so after investigating five conditions in himself. Bhikkhus are boys, but I would say this goes for girls too. After establishing five other conditions in him or herself, what are the five conditions? Am I one who practices purity in bodily actions, flawless and untainted? Am I flawless and untainted? Am I one who practices purity in speech, flawless and untainted? Is the heart of goodwill free from malice established in me towards fellowers in the holy life? Am I or am I not one who has heard much, who bears in mind what he has heard, who stores up what is heard? In other words, have I saturated myself with the teachings? Are the rules of conduct in full, thoroughly learned by heart, well analyzed, with thorough knowledge of their meanings by me? In other words, before you indulge in criticism of others, take a look at yourself. Am I pure? Am I flawless in my speech and actions? It's important that we don't get into a perfectionist mode here. But it's just the spirit of this. It's the spirit of spending time with yourself. It's the spirit of honest reflection. It's the spirit of zazen, really. When we sit zazen, we see ourselves pretty clearly. And it's not always a pretty picture, is it? We're distracted. We're angry. But when we can sit still with that and open our hearts fully to that, honestly look at it with a clear eye, with Buddha's eye, then we can become settled. It's not about perfection, and it's not about not speaking up when we see something or waiting until we're perfect before we speak up. It's about the spirit of interdependence. That's what we're waking up to. That's what we see. That's what we experience when we are truly settled. When we have settled our mind in this way, then the Buddha goes on to say, there are five conditions that we want to explore in right speech. And I would say this is honest speech. Do I speak at the right time? Is this the right time to say this? Somebody's running out the door and you say, oh, by the way, I was really upset by blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, you have to deliver a performance review at work. Or it's care, taking care with, is it the right time? Do I speak the facts or not? Is it true? To the best of my knowledge, now, and this is where the honesty comes in, right? What, to the best of my knowledge, what's true here? Am I being honest? Do I speak gently or harshly? Sometimes we can indulge in harshness because we think something is honest. Or we can subtly blame others because we think it's honest. Do I speak gently or harshly? Do I speak profitable words or not? Is this an act of being beneficial? Is this beneficial to myself and others? Is this going to be helpful? Do I speak with a kindly heart or inwardly malicious? Yeah. So, is it the right time? Is it true? Is it kind? Is it beneficial? Do I have a kindly heart? When we think in those terms, and take that up as a practice, then we are drawn back into interdependence. Because we have to, in order to do these things, to speak this way, we have to recognize that we're in relationship. We're always in relationship. We have to take the other person into consideration. We have to take the whole circumstance into consideration. What's good for the whole circumstance? Not just for me or one other person, but the whole of it. This is, I'm saying, honest speech. This is true speech. This is speaking true. It's like, you know that phrase, speak truth to power? This is that kind of speech. So I'll read you another version of this, this criteria for what is worth saying. In the case of words that the Tathagata knows to be unfactual, Tathagata meaning the Buddha, unfactual, untrue, unbeneficial, or not connected to the goal of awakening, unendearing, disagreeable to others, he does not say them. In the case of the words that Tathagata knows to be factual, true, unbeneficial, unendearing, and disagreeable to others, he does not say them. So even if it's true, if it's unbeneficial, unendearing, and disagreeable, he does not say them. In the case of the words that Tathagata knows to be factual, true, beneficial, but unendearing and disagreeable, he has the proper time for saying them. In the case of words that Tathagata knows to be unfactual, untrue, unbeneficial, but unendearing and agreeable to others, in other words, he's going through, I don't want to, you know, to try and remember this, but it's like taking all of these factors and mixing them up and saying, okay, it could be true, but is it the right time? Is it kind? It might be the right time, but it's not true. It might be true and the right time, but it's unkind. Right? So you're looking at all of these things and saying, basically, in some ways, if we followed this, we wouldn't say much. So, you know, we have to be a little, have a good heart about this and really. But this is about all of these things, when we consider them, lead us back to the awakened mind of the Bodhisattva. So it is deeply beneficial for us to consider the words of the Buddha in terms of what is kind speech, what is right speech, because that kind speech, right speech, even though the early Buddhism wouldn't characterize this way, is a reflection of the mind of the Bodhisattva, is a reflection of the awakened mind that sees clearly the interdependence of all beings and cherishes that. cherishes self, cherishes others, cherishes reality, and wants to give expressions through body, speech, and mind, all of our expressions, in a way that really most deeply reflects the nature of our reality, which is interdependence. So I think I'll stop there. Questions? Comments?